Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk joins us this morning, and the topic that just never goes away. So occasionally you get one of these, Mike. Brendan Sorsby. Before we get into all this stuff with it, I got to ask you, why would the agent come out, Brendan Sorsby's agent, come out and say Cincinnati knew about his gambling when he was playing for him? What would he get out of that? I'm just curious.
Well, this is one of the realities of doing a radio interview and speaking extemporaneously and answering questions. He seems to genuinely believe that Texas Tech is being unfairly chastised by everyone when Cincinnati, in his opinion, and I don't know what he knows, he didn't elaborate on how he believes, what he believes, that Cincinnati was aware of Brendan Sorsby's gambling habits for 2 years, but it came up in the context of an answer that strayed into Texas Tech isn't the one who should be catching heat. Cincinnati should be catching heat. I mean, if this is all about integrity of sport and playing someone who has gambled on his own team, bet on his own team when he was at Indiana, then why isn't Cincinnati being scrutinized? And frankly, there's enough there. If I'm the NCAA, I'm investigating this.
Oh, yeah.
The NCAA has no power as it relates to the players. It still has power as it relates to its members. Its members can't sue for antitrust, although I guess they could. But it would be a different case altogether if one of the teams that signed on to be part of the NCAA and be subject to NCAA rules tried to say the NCAA has no power over them. So I think there's enough there for the NCAA to have an obligation to, if they truly are concerned about integrity, to go all the way down the rabbit hole and figure out what Cincinnati knew and when Cincinnati knew it.
You know, Mike, you had a pretty good feel on this, man. I seem like paying you a lot of compliments these days, but you saw the NCAA stuff getting behind this, and the Big 12 was all in on going after him, and you were the first guy I heard say, hey, he might want to jump in that supplemental draft. He might be forced to, and sure enough, within a day, he's out. Now we find out Texas Tech said, hey, this ain't looking good, man. We need to let you go and get running with the NFL. It is amazing because they stood behind it and they were jumping up and down, and they got a billionaire and the president and the AD, and we're not moving. We're going to support this kid through this thing. And then something made them change, Mike, that got their attention.
What was the lawsuit that the Big 12 filed against Texas Tech on Monday to try to secure the ability to sanction Texas Tech if they use Brendan Sorsby in a game? And you got to look at it from the school's perspective. This is a one-year issue as it relates to your football team. It is a multi-year issue as it relates to the possibility of becoming a pariah in your conference. Is it really worth it when there's a chance that the Big 12 will win? There's a chance that you're going to have the rug pulled out from under you. One of the reasons I think Texas Tech went to Brendan Sorsby and told him it's time to go. And when you look at the paperwork that was filed to dismiss his lawsuit against the NCAA, the lawyers wrote in there that Texas Tech told him the day that the Big 12 lawsuit was filed, it's time to go. It makes sense. And the other side of it, too, and there's a clip floating around of Cody Campbell, the billionaire who's pulling all the strings at Texas Tech, where they invoke the idea that it hurts the other guys, too. And it does. You got a full team of players.
Right.
If you go undefeated and then all of a sudden you can't play in the Big 12 championship, you can't play in the college football playoff, you don't want that uncertainty hanging over your team. And they muddied the waters just enough to get to where I thought this had a chance to go, where Sorsby says, look, there's no certainty here. You know, and if he had waited and not applied for the supplemental draft, There's a chance he doesn't play at all this season. There's a chance that this is a cloud that's hanging over him every single week. It's hanging over the team every single week. Can you imagine the reaction he would have gotten when he went into opposing stadiums? It just, after the dust settled, it became untenable for Sorsby to stay. And it's unfortunate because he did win his lawsuit, but the end result, he did the only thing that I think he could prudently do, and now everything shifts to what the NFL is going to do about Brendan Sorsby.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask you. So you've been following up close with Roger Goodell and what he does on all these different suspensions through the years as the judge and jury. What's your thoughts on what's going to happen here? Does he let him come in clean, or is there a suspension coming with it, in your opinion?
There are two key precedents that apply to this. One, Terrell Pryor, 2011, he was facing a five-game suspension from the NCAA. For God forbid, he sold memorabilia, and he traded autographs for tattoos. It's quaint now. That was back when the NCAA actually had power. They suspended him five games. He went to the supplemental draft, and the commissioner found a way to suspend him for five games. And the NFLPA appealed it, filed a grievance, but it falls in a category. When you talk about integrity of the game, and that's how it was couched, the commissioner has final say under the CBA, under Article 46. So the prior case shows that the commissioner can do whatever he wants. The other precedent is when Patriots receiver Kayshon Booty, after he had been in the NFL for a year, it came to light that he was gambling underage at LSU, betting on LSU while playing for LSU, had a gambling addiction. He got arrested. They dropped the charges for underage betting. The NFL did nothing. Now they said, we're monitoring. They did nothing. And Ron Flavin, who represents Sorsby, mentioned that in his radio appearance yesterday. You've already set the precedent. You can't make up the rules as you go. Well, again, that's quaint, because we know, and I know from doing this for 25 years, the NFL does whatever it wants to do whenever it wants to do it. It does not want to be bound by precedent. You know, fairness and consistency and continuity come from respecting the prior results, the reasoning. This is like what happens in the legal field. You look at precedents. That's what judges do. Not everything has an easy answer. You don't plug numbers into a calculator and press a button. You look at how past cases that are similar to this one were handled. And Booty is the closest one. If you didn't do anything to Booty, you can't do anything to Sorsby. That's the best argument that Sorsby has. But I think the NFL, now I don't know the answer to this, but I think the NFL decided, you know what, we can't really do anything here. We let this guy into the draft. Like, if we do something to him now, from a PR standpoint, it looks like we had our heads up our butts when this guy came into the draft. Why didn't we know that this guy was doing, you know, they talk all about these different devices they have to find out if guys are gambling. It makes the system for catching guys gambling when they shouldn't look weak. If the NFL swings back around after the guy's been in the league for a year and says, oh, you're suspended for a year or whatever because you were gambling when you were underage and betting on your own team. So that's the best argument. But look, this is why the NFL pays all that money to Covington and Burling and the other big law firms. They can come up with an argument to reach a different outcome with Sorsby than they did with Booty.
How high a supplemental draft picks do you think people, after they've looked at him, they already know all about him. Like, you know, they're going to have a pro day, and he'll do interviews and everything else before this. But how high a pick could you see? Could you see anybody going in a second round on this?
Here's why I think second is possible. The way they're doing this supplemental draft, they are going to separate the teams into three groups: six wins or fewer than six wins. That's one group. Six wins or more and not in the playoffs, that's the second group. Playoff teams are a third group. They're going to do a lottery within each of those three groups to determine the priority, but the bright lines are going to be the three groups. Now, if I'm one of the teams in group three that made the playoffs last year, and I don't have a long-term answer at quarterback, and I decide I really like this kid, and I'm thinking that a team with higher priority is going to take him in round three, I better put in for him in round two. That's how this works. You put in before the draft begins, I'm willing to use this pick. Before the round begins, round one, anybody going to use their pick? And then you find out who's using the pick, and then you apply it to the priority, and the team with the highest priority gets him. So So if you're concerned, if you're a team that's low and you're concerned that a higher team is going to take him in round three, then you're going to put your pick in round two. And, hey, that could prompt a playoff team to take him in round one. If they fall in love with this guy, and no one's going to come out and tell us. This is all the same right. dynamics we deal with before the draft. No one's going to say, man, this may be another Patrick Mahomes. This may be another Josh Allen. And his agent's already trying to hype him up like a guy that can throw from all the arm angles, all the body positions, 4'4", speed, 6'3", 235. If somebody comes to the conclusion that they got a potential superstar, I could see a team low in the priority saying, screw it. This is our chance to get a 15-year starting quarterback. Let's take it.
The other follow-up to this, obviously, because we're talking about all the talent he has, and we've been hearing a lot about it, but the gambling past, the gambling addiction, and teams aren't necessarily structured to babysit a guy 24 hours a day. I just wonder, you think everybody's in on this? Teams obviously are talking about it, about his talent versus the other demons that he's still dealing with.
Well, that's part of what these teams are going to have to do. So much for having some time off.
Yeah,
it's time to get to work on Brendan Sorsby. And look, it's so hard to find a franchise quarterback. It is worth your while.
Yes, it is.
To spend your time to kick the tires on him physically. To if you love the guy, I think the first question is, how do we feel about the player? And if we feel strongly enough about the player to deal with all the other stuff, what's our plan for dealing with all the other stuff? And the fundamental problem from Sorsby's standpoint is there could be one team out there that wants him. It has a great infrastructure in place to help him. Then there could be some other team out there that is a slap-ass operation. And we know there's good teams and bad teams,
yep.
right? You could get a team out there that doesn't know, doesn't care, won't spend the time, won't spend the money, and they take him, and he ends up in a bad spot. I think a lot of factors are going to go into what's best for him, and are the teams going to be sensitive to it? Just market size, media focus, New York versus Minnesota. Like
yes.
if the Jets are thinking, hey, this could be our long-term guy, well, we're bringing him into the New York market and it's going to have a different level of scrutiny than if the Vikings say, hey, this guy's our long-term answer. This is the guy, we'll put him on ice for a year and then next year he'll be our quarterback. It's going to be different in Minnesota than it's going to be in New York. So there's a lot of factors that go into it completely out of his control. And that's true for anybody who goes into the draft. But he brings to the table different factors than we usually see with guys coming out of college.
Mike, the other crazy story that's made for Pro Football Talk, no question about it, and I heard your stuff on it, is this Brandon Ayuk, who just a couple years ago was one hell of a receiver on a really good 49er coach team. And he kind of went AWOL. Is there some, hey, I don't know how to say it, is there some mental health issues here? This the way it all broke up after injury and he disappears. They can't find him. He stops showing up. They put him on the left squad list. You think there's more to this? And now he's just, I mean, they're going to get to a point they're going to have to cut him because they're just not going to continue to put up with this. What's been your take on his whole take on how to get out of San Francisco?
Well, I'm never comfortable trying to diagnose someone's mental health condition.
I got you. I got
you. The videos
yeah,
they put on social
true.
Media. And it's easy to watch the two videos he posted criticizing the 49ers and say this guy's got issues. But you know what? In the grand scheme of things, I mean, his videos weren't nearly as off the rails as some of the videos Antonio Brown was putting out there when he was first trying to get out of Pittsburgh and then trying to get off of the Raiders. But this is – I understand why the 49ers squatted on him. Okay, the 49ers were upset. They paid this guy $50 million. He suffers an ACL tear, seventh week – of the first year of the contract, and then something happens and he goes AWOL and the relationship falls apart and they're just not going to cut him and let him go wherever he wants to go. And that's why they haven't released him yet. They don't have to. There's nothing forcing them to release him. They will release him, I believe, if he shows up for training camp, because if he gets injured, season-ending injury during training camp, they're going to owe him more than $26 million. So I think that is the moment they cut him. Before that, their attitude is, hey, maybe we get a low-round draft pick. He renegotiates his contract. He goes to Washington or wherever, and at least we have something to show for it. But at some point, I think the 49ers just need to say, we've got some responsibility here, too. You know, it was a weird, drawn-out, contentious negotiation 2 years ago. They were getting ready to trade him to the Steelers. He shows up at the facility and says, I'll take your long-term offer. the way Jay Glazer reported it, and Kyle Shanahan didn't dispute the report directly. He said it was mostly true. Shanahan sprints to John Lynch's office and says, hold the phone, stop the presses, we're going to sign this guy. Like, they had a chance to get out of this relationship and get significant value. And they eventually admitted their mistake with Trey Lance when they gave up all that stuff to go get him, and it never worked out. I think the best thing for the 49ers is just pull the plug and let this guy go. Just admit it and move on. You got your pound of flesh. You made your point. And based on the video that he posted, of, you know, with the Tony Soprano look, the boxer shorts and the open robe, going to get his newspaper, he's dancing, and he posted, coming to an end zone near you. After he deleted the videos criticizing the 49ers, it makes me think that he's under the impression the 49ers are going to release him before training camp. And, you know, he should have just shown up for offseason workouts. The moment he shows up and says, I'm here to get on the field and run pass routes and maybe injure myself again, that's the moment the 49ers would have cut him.
Yeah, man. Wow. Hey, I got to ask you about Mike McDaniel. We've been talking about Mike and some of the other guys that are no longer here. How do you think this thing's going to work out as the offensive coordinator and specifically for Justin Herbert with Mike McDaniel now as a coordinator?
You know, it all depends upon how Justin Herbert reacts to a guy coming in and essentially saying, we are going to change the way you play the position. And there's already been enough commentary from McDaniel to indicate that they are trying to unlock a higher level of performance from Justin Herbert. And it's just a weird situation. The guy's got a contract. It pays him toward the top of the market, $53 million a year or thereabouts, 55 maybe. And he's never won a playoff game. They're, you know, and it's become this great debate, primarily on social media. Does Justin Herbert get enough blame for why the Chargers don't achieve? Is it the guys around him? Is it Herbert? And, you know, one of the things they're trying to do, they're trying to get him to make quicker decisions, not hold the ball as long. And his numbers when he holds the ball longer are much better. His numbers when he gets rid of the ball quicker are worse. But what is the strength and beauty of Daniel offense? Boom, boom, boom. Quick, you know, quick motion, quick decision, quick throw. And I think they're going to try to, with McDaniel, unlock that element from Justin Herbert. But it all comes down to what kind of relationship McDaniel and Herbert are going to have. And Herbert's kind of a complicated guy, kind of quiet. And I think he can be a little in your face. Most great quarterbacks can. Between Harbaugh, McDaniel, and Herbert, it is the kind of thing. I hope he's on the quarterback series next year. I hope we have an eight episode
so
look
good. Yeah.
At life between Justin Herbert and Mike McDaniel. But we've seen what McDaniel can do with Tua, and Herbert is physically, all the metrics, a better quarterback than Tua. And look at what McDaniel did with Tua.
Mike, before I let you go, so we've had a lot here in South Florida. Everybody's writing articles, and we got a month and change to kill before everybody returns is Malik Willis, and he's going to be good. He's not going to be good, and he's got potential. But, if he doesn't have enough around him, it won't matter. Malik Willis can only – if the receiving core or they don't have a running game or something they're counting on, what's going to be your take watching Malik Willis? Because I see it's kind of – a lot of people aren't drinking the Kool-Aid that Malik Willis is going to be what a starting quarterback should be.
All I know is every time he played, when he played for the Packers, he looked pretty damn good. And when two guys who were in Green Bay with him for 2 years and had the ability to be around him, to see him on the practice field, to know what his reputation was for putting in the work, putting in the effort, and their first order of business. And I was saying this before free agency. Watch the Dolphins. The Dolphins are either going to pounce or they're going to shy away. And if they shy away, that's buyer beware, because this is a team that needs a quarterback, and they know a quarterback who's hitting free agency, who's had some great performances when he's played the past couple of years. And if they don't want him, red flag. They wanted him. Green flag. So I know that it takes the full team, and they're doing what they can to reshape the roster and rebuild the culture. It's not going to be a quick fix. Well, it could be. We've seen teams turn it around quickly. If I'm a Dolphins fan, I'm encouraged by the John Eric Sullivan, Jeff Hafley partnership, because it's the right kind of functionality you need between GM and head coach and let's just say that under Stephen Ross, that hasn't been the case very often, if at all, in Miami. So I think that it could get interesting, and the Dolphins could create enough hope this year that by next year we look at it and say, hey, you know, they're ready to make a move. And I can't rule out them making a move this year. With seven teams in the playoffs per conference, it doesn't take much of a turnaround to take a team that was on the outside looking in and put them in the playoffs. Most of these games aren't blowouts. They're close games. Sometimes you get luck that goes your way. The Dolphins could. Dolphins and the Jets, both of them, given the changes they've made this past offseason, they get lucky early and they build some momentum. The next thing you know, you get into late October, you got a team that potentially becomes a contender. So I'd be more inclined to be optimistic than pessimistic about Malik Willis. Yeah.
Mike, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Joe. See you, buddy.
Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk joining us this morning. Talk a little bit. And, hey, man, he and those guys at Pro Football Talk been all in on Malik from the start for what he just said. Hey, they know him better than anybody. And my question is going to be, can they run the football? And do they have enough talent at wide receiver in Coach Slowik's offense to give this guy a chance to show what he can do with all this athletic talent, and he's got a bunch.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
I will acknowledge this to you, Coach. I may have anointed Victor Wembanyama as one of the all-time greats, but he shrunk and he disappeared in the NBA Finals. The question is, why? And we were talking about it in the last segment. Was the stage too big? Did the Knicks have the perfect weapon to combat him with Cat? Does Mitch Johnson deserve some of the blame? Like,
bingo.
What was it? Yeah, we think Mitch Johnson. You are never going to hear a coach criticize. You're never going to hear a coach criticize another coach. You're never going to hear a coach criticize another coach.
Are you kidding? No. This was a conversation I had with NBA coaches at the NBA Top 100 last week. I think Wemby is great. I mean, you can't take anything away from the level that he's reached as a player. But he still has a lot of room for development. Now, I heard someone on TV say, oh, he's too young. So Magic Johnson won an NBA championship with the Lakers in his rookie year. He was 20 years old. 20. He scored 42 in Game 6 to win the championship, and he was MVP in 1980. So it's not about age. It's really about physical and mental and emotional maturity. And what I would say is, if I'm Wemby's coach, if I'm Mitch Johnson and I'm looking towards the future, I'm bringing in Hakeem or Tim Duncan to work with him on his jump hook because he doesn't shoot a jump hook. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have someone work with him on Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant's turnaround jumper because he lives totally on the perimeter. He catches a lob once in a while. He'll get a tip in once in a while. But when the game is on the line, you know, my good friend, Dr. Bob Rotella, the sports psychologist, world renowned, works with all the best golfers, works with all the NBA players, actually works with Carl Anthony Towns. And unfortunately, he always worked with De'Aaron Fox too. but what he would tell you at the end of close games, where really you expect your superstars to elevate their team and win, it's all about winning. You got to have a go-to move. You got to have an unstoppable move where they throw you the ball and you make the shot. And it can't take you a ton of time because, especially for a big guy, if they have to get you the ball, that takes a little time by itself. But there were so many factors in that series. I want to point out, coaching is a major factor. And De'Aaron Fox playing as poorly as I thought he did throughout the finals, Yeah, you gotta wonder why Mitch didn't take him out and go with those other three guards who were playing great. But how about the move that Mike Brown made, leaving Jose Alvarado in what was that game four?
Four. Yep.
He took out Mikal Bridges to put in OG. Here's Mikal Bridges, who makes what, $25-30 million?
Probably more.
And he leaves in a 6-foot point guard who makes like $3 or $4 million. That takes courage. That was a huge decision, and it paid dividends, because who did the Spurs have guard Jose Alvarado? Do you remember?
Wemby.
Wemby is right. And so that gave Jalen Brunson an automatic pressure release. I know Jose's always going to be open. I can give it to him. He'll give it back. Or I give it to him, and he penetrates and hits OG for a three. He stays behind the three and buries a three himself. He drives in there and acts like he's going to pull the ball back out and makes a layup. He was a key element in this series, because game four could have been the deciding factor. And instead of the Knicks falling short after being behind by, what was it, Solana, 26?
29,
right, 29 points. They come back and win that, and Jose Alvarado's in the game. Now, of course, he's from New York. I'm from New York. I recruited him, so I know him. He played on a very good AAU team. I know his AAU, the owner of his AAU program, is a great guy. And also he played at Georgia Tech in the ACC. So he has a great background for winning. He was on Georgia Tech's ACC championship team. And I will say, winning is a skill. The experts never predicted that Jalen Brunson would do what he did, but you got to give the kid credit. He knows how to win the game. Oh, he might not be the tallest, the fastest, the highest jumper, or even the best shooter of all time, but he's going down in history as a Hall of Famer, because he's one of the best winners from Villanova right to the NBA.
And Coach, you brought up all the names, the ancillary pieces did it. OG Anunoby had a crazy four-game stretch and all that, Coach. But even on the 29-point deficit to come back and win, that's why I say about Mitch Johnson, I don't know what they should have done when you're up by 29, Coach, but I know you shouldn't have been shooting threes, and I know you shouldn't have been shooting with 17 seconds left on the shot clock. Like, that's what I say. Mike Brown out-coached. He out-coached Mitch Johnson in this series.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you on that. But here's the thing. Mitch Johnson had the same dilemma that Mike Brown had, and he chose a different path. You know, when you have someone like De'Aaron Fox, you're paying him $40 million. You want to take him out, but you're thinking to yourself, what, who do I go with? Someone who's a rookie or just a second-year guy?
Dylan Harper, Coach. Put Dylan Harper in the game. He dropped 15
but he's a
in the
rookie.
First half.
I agree. Dylan Harper was phenomenal. And in one of the games, I'm not sure if it was game four or not, he only played 3 minutes in the fourth quarter.
That was insane.
Insane. Yes. So, but to be fair, he played a lot more in game five, and it was obvious they wanted to keep him on the floor at the end of the game. He had his opportunities. He got to the rim several times and was missing layups. Like,
well, after game four, someone asked me, do you think De'Aaron Fox made a poor choice by shooting that layup? And I said, well, you know, first of all, he's not thinking to himself, hold on to the ball.
Well, shouldn't he be?
Not. I'm not going to kill clock. I'm going to put this game out of reach. They were only up once.
They were up one.
I'm going to put us up three and force them to shoot a three. He doesn't think he's going to get a shot blocked. He doesn't think OG can catch him, because De'Aaron Fox, in terms of speed and quickness.
But isn't that more reason if you don't think you're going to get caught? Wouldn't that be even more reason to dribble it out and use more clock?
Yeah, but he's not thinking that.
I know, but shouldn't he be?
Well, they asked me what I would do, and I said, well, I can't jump like that. I'm not that fast. I would have dribbled it out and got fouled because I know I can make free throws. But De'Aaron Fox, he's thinking I'm faster. I'm going to lay this in, and we're going to win. That was a strange game.
Yeah. Beyond about, strange.
The Knicks are down 29 and win. Come on. And did Mitch Johnson – one of the things that I hate to bring up bad news for me, one of my experiences is we played Florida State at home. We're up 25 at the half, and we end up losing. Matt Cleveland was at Florida State at the time. He buries a three for the win. They beat us by one. Okay.
I was at that game. That was a few seasons ago, right? Wasn't Mario – didn't Mario show up at that game? I think I was at that game.
I wasn't at that game, so I don't know. I think my assistant coached that one.
I was there to see you. I'm pretty sure I saw you.
just know this. What ended up happening, we played absolutely phenomenal in the first half, and we actually ran out of gas. Nigel Pack did not play that game, so Bensley Joseph had to play the whole game. He had like 18 at halftime, didn't score in the second half. He just totally blew out all his energy in the first half and had nothing left in the gas tank. His defense wasn't as good. He couldn't handle the pressure from Florida State. It was just a real challenge for our team to keep that going. Now, is that what happened to the Spurs? I don't know. Well, you're up 29. At halftime, your players are thinking this game is over. Mm-hmm. It's a bad place to be mentally and emotionally. Now, you need to come out in the second half and play like you did to start the game, and you just don't have it. You've worn yourself so thin that the energy level is not there to really protect the lead.
All right.
Hey, you're still not thinking the Knicks are going to come back.
No.
The Knicks are not thinking, oh, we got this. No, they're like embarrassed at halftime.
I mean, we saw it at the postgame. I think Mike Brown said, I told him, hey, if you can cut it to 15 by the fourth quarter, we'll be in this thing. And it's exactly what they did. So kudos to him.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.
It is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale. One location, Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. ToyotaofHollywood.com, Joe.
Well, I got to tell you, man, it's the biggest sporting event in the world. It's not even close, no matter what any politicians might think. The World Cup is number one. It is great. It's in this country. We got seven matches going to take place here in South Florida. And joining us, longtime friend, she and her husband both, Michelle Kaufman, Miami Herald sports writer covering the World Cup and also Inter Miami. Michelle, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. It's about time. This is my 30th year at the Miami Herald. I will repeat, 30 years at the Miami Herald. This is my seventh World Cup. And you finally figured out that this is a sport we need to talk about.
I know. I have neglected it through the years. You're right. I think as I've gotten older, I've got more appreciation. You know what I really like about this, Michelle, is the matches, they've done a great job of really educating people. Our people are just getting more into soccer, soccer clubs as well as the teams from all these different countries. But I like the star power for all these teams, whether it's Messi going for the hat trick, Mbappe a couple of goals, Haaland had a couple for Norway, and then last night Harry Kane had a couple of goals with England. I just think the star power with these teams has really made it even more special. How about for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you sounded so authoritative as you rolled off those names. I'm so impressed, Joe.
I've watched a lot. This is the most I've ever watched.
It's really, really fun. But, you know, the thing, I love the star power, but what I love more are the fans. What I love the most about the World Cup is the passion that the fans bring. And I love American sports. I really do. I've covered the NFL, the NBA, I've covered them all. There is nothing, the only thing that's even in the same neighborhood is March Madness, where schools get so into their team being into March Madness, or, you know, the Cameron Crazies at Duke or something like that. But on a global scale in professional sports, There is nothing. If you've seen all the videos, I'm sure, on TV, on social media, you know, and it's not just the Argentines and the Brazilians, the Norwegians, this whole thing with they're teaching everybody how to row. They do this incredible rowing thing. And then the Tartan Army of Scotland, let me just warn you that they are coming this weekend. They are invading South Florida, and I broke a story yesterday that they are taking over Lone Depot Park on Monday for the Marlins game against the Rangers. And let me tell you, if you haven't been to a Marlins game this year, this is the one to go to on Monday night, because there could be as many as 20,000 of them in the stadium in their kilts, and they will sing so loud, the decibel level will be like nothing that the Marlins have ever heard. And they just did it at Fenway Park, and they went to a Yankee Stadium on an off day, and now they're coming to Miami on Monday night, and they're going to be invading South Florida. They're playing Brazil next Wednesday. Brazil against Scotland at Hard Rock Stadium. I'm telling you, those are two of the most fun-loving, passionate fan groups that you could ever see. So for me, I love the stars, yes, and Lionel Messi, forget about it. I mean, a hat trick a week shy of his 39th birthday. That hat trick, by the way, was 20 years to the day, June 16th, of his very first World Cup goal in 2006 in Germany. He was 18 years old. I covered that World Cup. He was 18 years old, came off the bench in the 75th minute, and scored his first World Cup goal at age 18. And here he is 20 years later at 38, scoring a hat trick.
It's
crazy.
I got to ask, and I almost called you at home on this one about a month ago, about all the Inter Miami stuff. I just tell everybody, and probably went too far, just enjoy watching this guy. We're never going to have another player like this ever come through this soccer team again. They just he is, if he's not the greatest, he's right there at the top in the very.
He's the greatest. I think he's the greatest. I mean, I know Pelé was incredible. It's a different era. You know how it is with football too.
Right,
with every sport,
true.
They say this guy's the best. This guy's the best. We don't know, because we don't know. If you threw Pelé out on a field now, you know, he would. It's a different game. He would have trained differently. He would play differently. I mean, it's hard to say. Every era of sport is different, but there is no question. I mean, in my mind, I think that Messi is the best. Just he not only scores, but he also makes everyone else better around him, and he passes. He makes, you know, he has so many assists. In addition to the goals, he also has so many assists. He makes everyone around him better. And the thing is, now that you've watched a bunch of the games, and when you watch a lot of soccer at the highest level, I'm not talking about watching other games, but you're watching the World Cup now. You're seeing the best players in the world, you know, day after day in all these games, and you see what he does in tight spaces where he gets the ball. The other guys, even really good players, they shoot from the outside, or someone gives them a long cross, and then they're right in front of the goal, and they finish, and that's wonderful. But what Messi does is he will just go, that little guy will just go right into the middle of the scrum, in between five defenders, right inside the box, and he will find, he like threads a needle, he will find a space and crank the crap out of the ball into the corner, and the goalkeeper tries to get it and can't, and it's just the things he does – nobody else does. No one else does what he does.
Michelle, I was talking about the amount of money he's made and still being motivated to still want to be known as one of the greatest players today in the game as he's getting closer to 40 and still what motive. I always wonder what motivates a guy like this to play at this level late in life when he has everything and yet he still – a lot of people thought he was going to show up at Inter-Miami and just kind of show up a little bit from time to time and kick a couple. He's the best player in the league by far, and
yeah,
it's incredible. What do you think motivates this guy that just to continue, even in this league, to want to be great?
I don't get to talk to him that much. None of us do. But the thing that I hear about him from everyone who plays with him and everyone around the club who's near him and everything, and you can see it, is that he is incredibly competitive. I mean, I know that sounds so cliche, but I mean, he invents little things in his head to try to motivate himself. And even like in every single training session, what I've heard, in every single training session, if they do some little 3-on-3 or a 5-on-5, any little scrimmage or anything, he is pissed if he doesn't win that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he must win. He hates losing still at this stage, even when there's no one watching, even when there's a practice. And I'm going to tell you something the other day about that hat trick, and I was not in his head because no one's in his head, but the fact that Mbappe and Haaland, two guys who are younger than him, 25 and 27, they both scored two goals that afternoon. Each of them scored two.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, that little man was sitting there saying, you know what, boys, you scored two, I'm going to score three. And, you know, they took him out in the 80th minute. He probably could have scored four.
Yeah.
He is ruthless. You know, he's got this reputation of, oh, he's this nice, humble boy from Argentina who was so little and he had to take steroids to get big. That guy is a freaking, he's a ruthless monster on the field. He's small and he comes off as Mr. Humble and Mr. Nice and Mr. Whatever. He's not. He is, you know, I would equate him, I mean, it's like Michael Jordan or Serena Williams, you know, these people that are just, they transcend the sport and they are, the word competitive doesn't even begin to explain how much they want to win, how much they hate to lose. And I think that's what motivates him, because certainly he has, listen to this number, 508 million Instagram followers.
Oh.
Half a billion people are following him on Instagram. He has more money than you could ever need. And he goes out there, and the way he plays,
it's amazing.
It's amazing. He's going to be 39 next week.
I've been saying the last couple of days, I go, man, we can talk about all the great ones coming through here and everywhere else, and he is, you know, people don't want to hear because some other sports are more popular here, but he's it, man. He is it. It's not even close. I want to ask you this, though. We've kind of watched the first round of everybody, and it's probably not fair because not everybody's playing against the same competition right now. Who looks the best to you of everybody you've seen so far, if you could guess? Is it France? Could it be England or somebody else?
I think Argentina looked very good.
Yeah, that's
true.
And they have this
man that we're talking about. And yes, it's hard to win back to back. They're the defending champions. But if anyone could, I would not put it past him. Just the fact that no one ever has, when I'm telling you about how he likes to motivate himself with these little things, the fact that that it's so hard to win back to back, I think that's motivating him for sure. Germany, I mean, you know,
Germany,
poor little Curacao. Poor Curacao is so sweet. I just wrote a story about them. They're adorable. But Germany crushed them 7-1. France looks good. England looks good. Norway looks good.
Yeah.
And by the way, United States, I mean, I know this is even crazy for me to say this, in that I don't think that they're, you know, they're not a world power yet. I'm not saying that they are going to win the World Cup. But the way this U.S. team played, and yes, it was one game on Friday, but Paraguay is no slouch. Paraguay had beaten Brazil and Argentina in World Cup qualifying. That is not a bad team. That was a good team. And the United States, the way they played, I'm telling you, this is my seventh World Cup. I've never seen a U.S. team play that well in a World Cup. The U.S. has always been known as the blue collar, never say die. Right. You know, we are American. We are blue collar. We never say die. We have great spirit, but not great skill, not great fluidity, and not so pretty to watch, but, you know, gritty. This team is not just about grit. This team played very well. And now that I've watched the entire first round, I have to say that the way the U.S. played, they really resembled one of the better teams the way they played in the first game. And the question is, can they sustain this going forward? But the way they played, if I'm evaluating just the first round,
right,
I think the U.S. had one of the best games in the first round.
Yeah, a lot of people said this could be their best team since you've been watching. Is it clearly the best team for you?
Yes. So far, it's one game.
No, I get it.
I was there in 2002 when in Japan and Korea they went to the quarterfinals. That's the farthest that they've gone. And that team was really good. That team had Landon Donovan, DeMarcus Beasley, and those guys. And they went to the quarterfinals. Bruce Arena was the coach. That's the farthest they've ever gone, quarterfinals. And that's really far. And no team since then has been able to equate that. So time will tell. It's still really early. But I can tell you that I personally have never seen a U.S. team play that well at a World Cup.
Can't wait for 3 o'clock tomorrow. Australia and United States going to be fun. Michelle, thank you so much. Will you do me a favor, one favor, give Dave a big hug and tell him it's a big man hug from Joe Rose. Just tell him
I
that.
Will give him a huge man hug. Okay.
Michelle, thank you so much. It's
sure,
great talking
absolutely.
To you.
Call me anytime. I'm always around.
All right. We'll do it again next week. Thank you.
All right.
Michelle Kaufman, Miami Herald sports writer, covering World Cup and Inter Miami. And, man, she knows her stuff. There is no question about it.
Oh, wow. I mean, Jimmy, you're trying to kiss Gelb's ass or you're trying to start a fight with Solana?
Never.
I mean, you're playing New York, New York? I mean, what are you doing here, Jimmy?
I could have played Queen.
I mean, you could have just played a song. Why Queen? Oh, for Queens?
No, Queen. No, like, We Are the Champions.
Oh, I got you.
Yeah. What are you doing?
I mean, what the hell is he doing?
I don't know.
Unbelievable. I mean, he's kissing Gelb's ass? What are we doing here?
You're sucking up to the Knicks fan?
Unbelievable.
Walk me through that thought process.
Yeah, walk me through that thought process. Hold on, Gelb, before you start celebrating. Celebrate the summer of soccer with WQM. Solana's actually annoyed.
Yeah, but like, because why? For what reason?
Yeah, what reason? Wouldn't we troll Gelb instead of celebrating him? Oh, what the hell's going on
here, you can't really
Jimmy?
Troll him now.
Oh, watch me.
What?
Watch me. I'd have had a montage of him singing the praises of who's a Mac Jones.
Right.
I'd have come out with a Mac Jones montage. Anyway.
I'm not Ben Volen.
Before we get to you, celebrate the summer of soccer with WQAM this Friday right here. Solana and I are at the Citadel today in Miami. It's where the studios are. Starting at noon on Friday, we're having a huge celebration for the summer of soccer. Every hour, one lucky fan gets a shot to win up to $10,000 in our Soccer Kick Challenge. You can enjoy complimentary global food samples from Wild Fork, Cafecito from La Llave, Rooftop Vibes with Al Capone. Udonis Haslam is going to be here aboard the Hard Rock Bet bus. There's going to be games, giveaways, prizes, and match day excitement. So you come for the soccer, you stay for the vibes. The summer of soccer right here at the Citadel in Miami, Friday, noon. It is sponsored by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, by La Llave Smooth Espresso, by your South Florida Chevy dealers, Al Capone Sweet Hand-Rolled Cognac Cigars, Wild Fork Neighborhood Meat and Seafood Market, Hard Rock Bet Sportsbook, and by Verizon, an official sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026. Zach Gelb hosts the Zach Gelb Show on 365 Sports. He's the studio host for NFL and college basketball on Compass Media Networks. Follow him on media, social media at Zach Gelb. And you can also hear him hosting shows on WEEI in Boston and WFAN in New York, right here on 104.3 FM WQAM. He's going to be filling in for me a lot this summer, as a matter of fact. And he's on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline right now wearing a New York Knicks-colored New York hat. Are you going to the parade tomorrow?
I'm going to try. It's a block and a half from my apartment, but I don't even know if I'm going to be able to enter.
So
you're
just going to walk on the street and be on the sidewalk and watch it? Like, you don't have any kind of bird's eye view?
No special access. They asked me if I wanted to be in a float to troll Solana, and I politely declined. So I will not be.
You don't want to be in Jimmy's float? Jimmy has a float out there tomorrow in New York.
It would be like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade with like the big animals that they just have floating in the side, just big Jimmy,
big inflatable Jimmy.
Yeah. So there's like security checkpoints and things like this. You know, some people are getting out there as early as 6 a.m. I'm going to leave my apartment at 7:30 with the parade started at 10:30 and hope that's enough time, but with a block and a half up.
Yeah, I would imagine that that you'll probably be all right there. Where does this Knicks postseason rank in the pantheon of postseason performances? Because it was, I mean, statistically pretty damn good.
It's unbelievable. Like, for what it means to the city, because the goalposts, like Solana was a goalpost mover. Ah, the East was weak. Ah, they'll get slammed by the Western Conference. Remember, you tried to tell me Donovan Mitchell and the Cavs were going to beat them in like four or five games? Oh, my God. And then they get to the NBA Finals. I know that, Hawk, you thought the Knicks could win. Solana and Crowder did not. I picked them in six. I was too generous to the San Antonio Spurs, and they whipped that ass. And here's the craziest part. I don't even think the Knicks played a great game in the NBA Finals. Game one, they came back from down 13. They smoked them in the third quarter in game two. Game three, they got blown out. Game four, they come back from down 29. And then they came back once again in quarter number five. It just shows you how much of a team this is. And I made a joke last year. And I was being serious, but it was like a little tongue-in-cheek just to get a little reaction out of Solana. I said the reason why Solana hates this team so much last year is because there's a lot of Heat culture kind of feel with this team and the way that they play. And kind of like what Jimmy Butler did with the Heat, except the Knicks took it one step further, and that was four more victories to win a championship.
Is Jalen Brunson the greatest Knick of all time now? Because even his own father, Gelb, for literally no reason, said it was Patrick Ewing, but Jalen Brunson delivered the ring that Pat ultimately couldn't. So does that immediately put him in the conversation for the greatest Knick of all time?
Yeah, like, I wasn't around for Walt Clyde Frazier. We all know his significance to the franchise. But with how unlikely this was, he's the most... The way I'll say it, some people may not say he's the best. He's the most impressive Knick of all time. Like, he saved a franchise that if you would have told me 6 years ago, 7 years ago, they would win a championship, I'd be like, what dope are you smoking? Like, no one would have ever thought that. And all throughout the way, he's been doubted, and it's amazing. He's going to be a basketball Hall of Famer. Like, in college, two national championships, a Player of the Year award, and now he goes to the NBA and wins a championship and a Finals MVP. He's the most impressive Knick. I think that's the way to say it.
What do you come out of the Finals thinking about San Antonio? Because...
Not ready.
We've talked about it. So is that all it is? Is it just San Antonio wasn't ready, or is it this? First of all, the Knicks had a great Wemby stopper in Karl Anthony Towns, or a great game plan to stop Wemby. Or did Wemby wilt? Did he just kind of wilt like a flower that wasn't ready, that wasn't ripe yet? Or did Mitch Johnson have a lot of issues as the head coach making curious decisions? You know, I mean, stuck with De'Aaron Fox to a point where it hurt them. I'm so confused by what I saw from the Spurs during the finals.
So it's two different roads because the Thunder needed seven games. The Spurs needed seven games to beat the Thunder, where the Knicks just swept the Cavs. So the Knicks didn't need to have this emotional release after winning the Eastern Conference. The Spurs did. They acted like they won a championship. Now, did that impact the series? I don't know, because the Spurs are still up by 13 points in game one, and then they choked it. Like, look at LeBron. Now, that Cavs team, the first team he was on, was not ready to win a championship, but they got there. It was a remarkable achievement. They ran into San Antonio. LeBron needed to lose two NBA finals in order to win one. Like, him losing to the Mavericks is probably Wemby's moment of losing to the Knicks. And LeBron kind of acted like a jerk after that. Wemby, throughout this series, and I like Wembanyama, I think he's an alien, but he was unlikable in this series with the crap that he pulled afterwards, you know, the whole Jalen Brunson head shove. And he was, it's a bad moment for him in game four when he's like, I'm in your head to Mitchell Robinson, and then you don't win that game and you miss two free throws down the stretch. Looks like us New Yorkers, us sleazy New Yorkers, were in your French head, Victor Wembanyama.
All right. I don't have one ring in the past 50 years. Wait, let's settle down.
Can you just shut up and congratulate me?
Nope. Yeah, like, why don't you congratulate him?
For what?
For his team winning a championship.
One ring? I'm talking about one ring, Hawk, in the last 50 years?
How about this? Hey, someone puts on the text line, Gelby, is Mike Brown a better Knicks head coach than Pat Riley?
Oh, not even. Here's my follow-up. Hey, Salada. Would you trade Eric Spoelstra for Jalen Brunson? Would you?
Nope.
Oh, you're an idiot. You're a skinny idiot. I was going to call you a fat idiot, but you're not fat. You are a skinny pencil dweeb idiot.
I'm taking Spo. And I'm taking Spo and De'Aaron Fox over Jalen Brunson.
Is your wife's a medium-sized shirt, right? Small?
She's a small.
Yeah. Not the only jersey you have to be worried about. I got her a Brunson jersey coming right to the house.
Yeah, right.
She's going to go make you some pancakes and a Brunson jersey.
He was upset because today he woke up and she was wearing a Columbia jersey. Yeah. And, yeah.
And then this dummy Jimmy is wearing a Columbia jersey and he's playing New York, New York. What are you doing,
Everybody's
bro?
Trolling you today.
Crazy. Crazy. I expected it from Gelb. Gelb, no joke. What does this say about the Eastern Conference? Because we're talking about, you know, the past couple off seasons. Kevin Durant wanted to go to Houston. Now Giannis Antetokounmpo, it seems like he would prefer to stay in the Eastern Conference. But in terms of what the Knicks did this year, what the Pacers almost accomplished last year, and you can even go back to the Toronto Raptors. I know it's 7 years ago now, which is crazy. But the Eastern Conference, if you're a superstar in the NBA or even a really good star like Jalen Brunson, it makes more sense to go to the East because
doing that really good crap?
No, I mean, he's a great all-star. Great playoff performer.
Immortal.
All-star.
Iconic.
Immortal.
Legendary.
Yeah. No, he's a superstar. Legendary. I was wrong. He's a superstar. I was wrong. I was wrong. You're right.
Your connection broke up. One more time, what was that?
I was wrong. He is a superstar. You have a 45-point closeout to win the NBA Finals.
Shoved it up your keister.
Yeah, you are a superstar. I was wrong. I got all those stupid DMs from all you Knicks fans. I'll eat it. And
how was
congrats.
Your parade, by the way, the Knicks loser parade? How was that?
There's one guy on Twitter that has DM'd me like every single day since the Knicks won. Hey, how's the parade at La Carreta, bozo?
Oh, that was my burner. Sorry. I have a quick take, though. And I heard you guys on the show open. And I've never thought about this. And I'm going to preface it by saying it's zany. Right now, it feels as if it's going to be the Celtics or the Heat for Giannis. I've been someone that has said from the jump, I think the Miami Heat are going to land Giannis Antetokounmpo. But then you also hear that the Bucks don't want Jaylen Brown. They would need a third team. Could we get to a world? This would be the absolute craziness, but it could also help the Heat. If let's just say the Bucks say, we want to send Giannis to the Celtics. We need a third team. Where the Heat actually get Jaylen Brown in this.
Yeah, we had seen a couple scenarios where that plays out. We talked about that. That would be, I mean, I don't think anyone would be upset at that, right? That would be fine. We were having the conversation yesterday. If Giannis falls through, there's been some scuttlebutt that maybe the Heat have an interest in Trae Young from Washington.
Oh.
Would that be a disappointment?
If somehow the Heat land Trae Young, I would love to hear the Heat shill, Salada the shill, try to spin that one. I don't even think he could do
it. You're talking about the Knicks killer? The Knicks killer? I mean,
oh but you're, my God. You're, Salada, you're going to need like just random spots of your hair just go missing.
But
to support
where do you think Washington, they're going to have the number one overall pick. Let's say they keep Trae Young and have Anthony Davis as well. Where do you think they stand in the pantheon of the East?
So DeBanza would be there because I think it's going to be DeBanza over Peterson. Anthony Davis, whenever he's healthy, wake me
assuming,
up.
Assuming he gets enough.
Play-in team?
At their best, you think they're a play-in team?
Maybe a fifth seed? Like if the regular season actually matters to them, a fifth seed or a fourth seed? Do I think if you match them up with the Knicks in the postseason, they're going to be beating them? No.
Would the Heat be better?
And the Celtics are going to be back next year, and so are the Pacers.
Would the Heat be better with Bam and Trae Young than Bam and Tyler Hero?
No.
No?
No.
No.
I don't trust Trae Young.
Yeah.
I'll even make this case. I think the Heat are more equipped to win a championship with Jaylen Brown and Bam than Giannis and Bam. I don't think that's crazy.
Wow.
Well, I was going to say, Gelb, because we didn't really dive into it too much yesterday, but in terms of fit and youth, Jaylen Brown...
Youth, for sure.
Would be the better fit next to Bam Adebayo. By the way, I know that they have a friendly relationship. It would make more sense for the Heat. I'm just having a hard time figuring out, one, why the Celtics are trying to split up Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. We talked about this, Gelb. I can't wrap my head around that, and I think it's a dangerous game. Floating trade rumors are not shutting down these trade rumors of JB because clearly, you know, he's a bit of a prima donna. But you're telling me they're going to send Jaylen Brown to the Miami Heat in this scenario where immediately they're contenders now by doing that. At least if they send him to Milwaukee, he's not contending by himself in Milwaukee. Yeah. So I don't understand where that makes sense for the Boston Celtics.
Well, the only reason I'm saying that is because there's rumors that they need a third team. So, like, a lot of people are then saying, okay, that's because the Bucks don't want Brown, so the third team could be the Heat. I know it's unlikely, and who would have ever thought that there could even be a possibility of the Bucks, the Celtics, and the Heat, with all that, those inner workings through the years, then could potentially have a trade? But I don't think it's a bad option if you guys wind up with Jaylen Brown.
No, that's probably the next best option after Giannis. Some would argue that's a better option than Giannis. I think the options, we discussed them yesterday, goes Giannis, then Jaylen Brown, if that's a real possibility, then probably Kawhi Leonard, maybe Ja Morant, and then Trae Young. Like those are probably your five possibilities.
Hey, Pat Riley, by the way, we're not interested in Pat Riley and Spoelstra for Leon Rose. Not interested.
Oh, okay. Yeah. One ring.
Leon Rose runs circles around Eric Spoelstra. Circles.
I mean.
Circles.
Listen.
The guy turned around the Knicks.
I can't hate on Leon Rose right now.
No, you can't. You can't.
After the season that they
didn't
had.
Didn't need a super even, team.
But, I mean, James Dolan was on the cusp of being run out of the city.
Did you hear his talk with the team?
He was the most despised owner in sports for a minute.
That's the one image. I could envision through this run, Leon Rose with the trophy, Brunson with the trophy, Cat with the trophy. When they had James Dolan on the stage going, yeah, we did it. Like, I thought my brain was going to break. I go, that's an image. I could have had the craziest dreams. I would never be able to dream that.
Crazy how
that's the surreal. That's a surreal image. And also, before game four, he's getting into a fight with the mayor. He's guaranteeing a championship, and somehow he won all of it. He walked into the FAN studios in January, whenever that stupid Emirates Cup was handed out. He's like, "We're not raising a banner because we're going to win a championship this year." He said it. He was right. It's amazing. With all the deplorable things that he's done, that now he gets this.
Will Oakley be in the parade tomorrow?
Oh, F him. Like, I am so sick of Charles Oakley. All the guy's done is trash the organization for years, trash Patrick Ewing. He had the sympathy But that guy, verbal diarrhea the last 5 years. I have no care for Charles Oakley anymore.
Oh, look at that.
Wow.
All right. Well, we'll end it on that. Toughness. Some Knicks on Knicks hate.
That's right.
That's how we'll end it. That's. I feel like we finally got somewhere.
Typical rats from New York.
Yeah.
Turning on each other like a mob family.
Can I just ask one question? Solana, what was going through your head when you saw the Knicks with the Larry O'Brien? You know, even Vince Goodwill beat you to the trolling. Oh, it's a participation trophy.
What was that?
Well, you know, I mean, leave my guy V. Goodwill alone. But Gelb.
He's an a-hole.
I'm not taking anything away from the Knicks. Unbelievable run. But. And you have to tip your cap to that Mickey Mouse ring. But... What I was thinking, I'm not even joking.
Okay, Jimmy Butler in a bubble.
What I was thinking was...
The only one that got a ring out of that was Rachel Nichols.
The
maybe.
Real winner this NBA offseason was the Chicago Bulls with Thiago Splitter.
Somebody should investigate De'Aaron Fox. And I'm not joking about that. Like, check his text messages, check his email history, search his house for burner phones. That was
DNA test. Make sure it was actually De'Aaron Fox. Maybe that was an imposter.
That was the ugliest display of basketball from an alleged star, the highest paid player on a team in the NBA Finals I've ever seen in my entire life, ever.
How about that OG Anunoby tipping?
Oh my God. I mean, that couldn't have been more perfectly timed. That end was almost impossible. And by the way, the Spurs were going to win that game with a second and a half left because they ran the perfect play.
The Spurs
and then Carl
win
Anthony
the
Towns had the deflection.
Yeah.
The Spurs win the finals.
Yeah.
If OG doesn't get that tip in.
Crazy.
Gelb. They win the finals. The entire series shifts momentum. I think the Spurs have a little bit more.
Spo for OG Anunoby.
What?
Jeez. Chris, I think the Knicks are getting ripped off there.
Chris Quinn for OG Anunoby.
How about Tyler Cole? We'll do Kolick for Spolstra.
All right. We got to go. We love you, Gelby. So you're going to fill in for me? I'm leaving Monday for Switzerland. Are you in on Monday?
Yes, we're going to have Funky Buddha Knicks Happy Hour every Monday at 5. It's going to be great.
How dare you? Do you regret having him fill in for me
now? I have no idea. When OG tipping went in, all I could think about was I'm doing 2 weeks with this jackass. Yeah. Oh, my God.
I may have to step in and override this.
Yeah. Cancel your vacation. Where are you going?
I don't even have to cancel my vacation. I'm the supreme leader in this show, and I just may have to put a fatwa on Gelb's head.
Where's Channing, by the way?
Hey, he's around. He's doing his thing. He's in.
Well, if he's doing like a pivot interview with Jalen Brunson,
he's in Nashville.
If he's doing like an interview with Brunson or someone for the pivot, I expect an invite.
All right, fair enough. All right, we got to go. We love you, Gelby.
You got it. Be well. Go Knicks.
Zach Gelb. Chance. We love Zach Gelb, and he will be filling in for me a lot this summer while I'm vacationing all across Europe.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.